Folks, do you believe in our founders' vision for America? That our republic will only survive if we are an educated and informed people who know our rights and duties? Since 1844, Hillsdale College has sought to educate all who wish to learn about these timeless principles of self-government. For more than 50 years, the college has worked to spread that mission by sending Imprimis, their Digest of Liberty, to millions of Americans, including me. Imprimis features some of the best speeches given at Hillsdale events, and now an audio version of the popular speech digest is available in a new podcast of the same name. And like the printed publication, Imprimis the podcast is always free. You can hear the best arguments from speakers such as Christopher Rufo, Mark Stein, and Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arn, among many others, all read by Hillsdale students. Visit DanaForHillsdale.com to subscribe today and start listening to Imprimis today, all for free. To listen, visit DanaForHillsdale.com. That's DanaForHillsdale.com.
To the European continent and this announcement by the Pentagon, I think it's important to keep this in context. We've already increased by 20,000 the number of troops that we have on the European continent, and by and large, we've been able to keep that rotational presence there. So you got more than 80,000 troops there in Europe, and that's a lot. And what we're going to do with the small number of 3,000 reservists or National Guardsmen, these are people that are specialists in things like administrative functions, logistics, supply, maybe medical, dental, those kinds of the kind of enabling functions that you need to be able to support and sustain a large troop presence for a long time. And what this is basically is a realization of the fact that we know, the president knows, that the security environment in Europe is changed, not has changed, not will change. It's changed now. And we've got to make sure that we've got the proper force posture to be able to support an additional eastern flank presence for the long haul.
Okay, so I am made of questions today.
Me too.
Welcome to the show. You're, how do I say this? You're somewhat bemused curmudgeon. It's Friday. I'm on the other side of my major allergic reaction that made me look like Sloth from the Goonies. So as you can see, I'm starting to look slowly more and more normal on the simulcast. Although all the medicine that I'm on has me surfing the rainbow. Like, not that way, though. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, Noah's rainbow for the love. You, what is your mind at? I know it's Friday, but you people out there, I know the first thing you thought of. I am super spacey and weird today. The rest of the roids haven't kicked in because you got to take it in chunks. So I'm just warning you right now. No clue what's going to happen today. I'm in a really good mood. Could change. Who knows? So, I mean, I have a lot of stuff to dive in with you guys today. And I'm going to try to make it to where we don't dive into the weeds as much as possible. But I just want you to be aware of, like, what's happening in the House, what's been moving in the House, what you can expect in the Senate, particularly with the NDAA. And then all of this crazy stuff with, I don't know, I feel like I was told that it was Trump that was going to get us in the wars, yep. Right? I mean, how many of you out there, and first off, greetings and salutations. Dana Lash with you. I was told reliably, Kane, by our moral betters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those people that work at the New York Times and all this other stuff. We were told by these people,
yep,
that, hey, it's going to be Trump that gets us in all the wars. Do you remember when he called, oh my gosh, what's that short stack lunchbox down there? Kim Jong-un.
Yeah,
the son of the other short stack lunchbox. Remember when he called him like a rocket man or something, and then everyone said, oh my gosh, Trump's insulting world leaders. He's going to get us in a war, all the wars. We're going to be in the wars. I was told that we were all going to die in all the wars that Trump was into. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I look on social media, and I had, you know, there's always some trust fund socialist out there on their latest iPhone contraption going, you Trumpkins, you maggots. They thought they were so clever. It's so, so sad. It's the summation of their lives. You maggots are supporting a tyrant who's going to get us to all these wars. Okay. All right. You know, I see how you're wrong, but okay. But we didn't get into any of the wars, Kane, did we? Did we get into a war that I just don't know about? Did we have a long nap, Rumpelstiltskin?
Not a single war. It's weird.
So then, last night, you know, I'm just doing my stuff. I'm getting stuff ready for the newsletter to send out to you guys, right? Like, I'm doing the newsletter. I'm getting it ready. I'm getting it, you know, prepped to send out. I'm looking over some pieces from some of our contributors on the newsletter because I'm trying to focus on doing bigger deep dives for you. And so to free up time to do some really long deep dives, we got some contributors writing some other pieces. Lorraine's been doing a good job. We got a couple other contributors that have joined up. And I've been working on this thing on 2024. And I see this. I see this story. And at first I thought, nuh-uh. There's no way. There's no way this has been happening. No. Because it had to do with the reservists and Operation, what is it? Atlantic Resolve. Right? Now I have it on my rundown with all the little siren emojis. It's the only time I ever use an emoji. It says, Biden signs order to call up 3,000 troops for Operation Atlantic Resolve in Europe. Now, we were reliably informed that this is not, you know, he's not going to get us in any kind of wars. This seems weird. And I know what I know and I know what I don't. So I was asking some friends of mine. I'm like, how weird is this that, you know, he's calling up some of these reservists? Because, you know, if you're calling up some reservist to do, you know, maybe that's one thing. Am I reading too much into it? What my friends were telling me was that it was the type of reservists that were being called up. Like, these are the dudes that have recently retired, like within the past 2 years. And so that's a little different. And I think the last time that was done, they were kind of going back and forth on it. It was like Reagan, essentially. Out of the three people that I asked, two of them said it was under Reagan. The other one, full disclosure, was like, I think it may have been, but I'm not sure. So that's a little bit different. It's designated as a contingency operation. And this is according to the Joint Staff Director for Operations, Lieutenant General Douglas Sims. This all happened late yesterday. Very convenient. They knew. Y'all are going on vacation. Y'all are doing stuff. Maybe you're going on vacation. Maybe you're doing a nice little staycation at home. You know, you're getting out the barbecue. You're getting stuff ready. They knew. So, you know, I'm looking at this. I'm like, this is interesting. This piece from the Daily Caller. And Lorraine had noted this as well, who also runs the YouTube discussion. I thought this was funny. Says Biden escalates the U.S. military response to Ukraine war by authorizing the activation of 3,000 reserve troops. Now, they're very careful with their language on this. They say, well, we have some there already. We have some boots on the ground there already. So what we're not sending new troops in. That's silly. We're simply augmenting what we have there. Okay, we're augmenting what we have there. Kane?
Yeah.
If you're augmenting something that exists,
right?
Define that for the folks out there.
I mean, imagine some sort of, you know, change or manipulation or...
If you're augmenting, are you adding something or taking something?
Oh, no. Yeah, you're... Definitely adding it.
Mm. Okay. Interesting.
It's definitely different than the original.
Yeah. And so the augmentation, it's the individual reservists. And as I was saying, those are the people that have recently retired, but they also have this a caveat to their retirement. They also have this window where they can be called back up into service. And those are the people... That's the order that was given. So that's what's incredibly interesting to me. That's what sticks out, and that's what all of my friends are saying is incredibly different about this. Now, Operation Atlantic Resolve, and I'm going to get into that, but I just want to nail down what, you know, the order that the president did, and then I want to give you a little history on Operation Atlantic Resolve, because one of the things that you're going to be coming up against when you're seeing commentary on this or you're seeing the headlines pass or, you know, cable news, whatever, is that the excuse is, well, it's, you know, that's an operation that's been going for a long time, so I don't know why everyone's freaking out now. Well, that's not a justification. It's an incredibly different, you know, piece on this. It's very different. So we're going to talk about that. But the big thing is that it's the type of reservist. But I love how we're being told, well, it's, you know, it's an augmentation, guys. You know, it's that makes it incredibly different. It's an augmentation that makes it different. You know, we're just augmenting some things. That's like saying, you know, when I was in Italy, you know, I was in Italy for 10 days, you guys know, because you miss me greatly. And I was like, I already had a portion of gelato today. I think I'm the only person that lost almost 10 pounds that went to Italy. Ate like a fat man. I ate like a 600-pound dude. I am not joking you. I lost 10 pounds because you walk everywhere. I swear, hands to sky, I lost like 9-point-something, 8 pounds walking everywhere. Ate like mad, like massive things of pasta. Y'all, I had gelato 3 times a day. I am not even lying to you. 3 times a day I had gelato. Everything. And I walked everywhere and lost about damn 10 pounds. There went my whole get fat and have natural filler, you know, plan going into Italy. Anyway, which is the only way I would do it. Anyway. So I'm like, you know, I would augment, Kane. I had some, you know, some gelato a little earlier. I had some limon gelato a little earlier. And I'd be like, you know what? I feel like I need to augment the portion that I had. So what do? I augmented by getting more. That's, words have meanings. I felt like we all learned this when we were in elementary school. But apparently, I guess, some of the geniuses in the White House and DOD skipped this. And the Pentagon skipped this. So if you're augmenting the existing number, you're adding more to it. Okay. So that's the big aspect to this. They're not additional forces. I mean, this is forces that, you know, we're augmenting what we have there. You're sending more people. That was a direct quote, by the way. You're sending more people. That's what that means. I tell you what, I can't even deal with this. Slap some people. It's in the world. So Operation Atlantic Resolve, this has been going on since 2014 with the initial invasion into Ukraine by Russia. This is the Donbas region. You know that there's a couple of different areas over there that have been the authority and by which they operate has been contested. And there's a significant portion of people that say, no, we're Russian. You know, Ukraine says, no, you're Ukrainian, etc. That I think that what people need to realize is Russia's taken Crimea and that's the end of it. Let's just move from there. That's the end of it. But I almost sent a super sassy post last night because I was reading, you know, just some of the spin on this. Because we've spent so back in April of 2014, we already sent a number of military members, not a major force, but you know, a number to show that we were committed to our Baltic, you know, the Baltic area and some of our NATO members there. We sent some to Poland. We sent some to Latvia, to Lithuania, to Estonia. We were just conducting some military exercises. You know, Latvia is a beautiful country. We're just conducting some military exercises. And it was in response to this annexation of the Crimean Peninsula. Now, the stickler here, it wasn't done as a NATO action. It was just, you know, a bilateral basis with these nations, right? So now we have these additional ones that we're sending over there. Does that look like an escalation to you?
Yes.
This old fart is going to just fall up the stairs and get us into World War III. And let me tell you something. This is part of the sassiness because I was full of fire last night. So I purposely stayed offline because I was in roid rage. I was in rare form. I'm like, you know, if you have this guy, if you have the Biden administration that falls up the stairs and walks us into World War III and sends our spouses, our sons and daughters to go and fight for a foreign entity over a land dispute that doesn't involve us, you are going to see major swaths of the American people become more ungovernable than you could have ever imagined. We have a lot to get into because Bastille Day, I always like reminiscing about Bastille Day and the difference between the American and the French Revolution and the concept of freedom from and freedom to, which I think is the best way to distill everything down as to the crux of the difference between the American and the French Revolution. I think everybody needs to, it's a shame that people aren't required to read Tocqueville before they graduate high school. So we're going to talk a little bit about that because we're on a slow slide. We're having our American ideals French revolutionized by the modern day Jacobins, if that makes sense. So we're going to talk about all of this stuff.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
As Biden continues to tout his Bidenomics plan, does any of it sound familiar? How about the Soviet-style five-year plan? State-run capitalism is not capitalism. Command and control economics fails every time it's tried. Bidenomics equals Chinanomics. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So residents near a homeless encampment have expressed outrage because they learned that a swimming pool was installed for the vagrants. The individual responsible for setting up the pool remains unknown. It's right beside. It looks so trash, dude. It looks right beside a Seattle freeway, according to KOMO News. And they say it's all ludicrous. They say that, you know, people have been breaking into stuff. Somebody drilled into somebody else's gas tank. I mean, it's kind of crazy. They shouldn't have to worry about this. Yeah, you don't make people easy in this kind of stuff. You help them get out of it. Dan Crenshaw is mad because he says staffers, not actual members of Congress, thwarted the psychedelics amendment to NDAA. This is actually a very interesting discussion we should have next week. Stick with us. We got a lot more. I talked too long last segment.
Kel-Tec launched into 2023 this year with a new addition to their lineup of innovative high-performance firearms. The new Kel-Tec P15 has broken the mold. Compact and maximum firepower generally don't go hand in hand. However, the P15 offers both in a uniquely small package. The P15 is an excellent choice for concealed carry. It offers plenty of dependable firepower to secure your world. This striker fire pistol is the lightest, thinnest, double-stack 9mm handgun on the market. At only 14 ounces, 7/8 inches wide, and a 4-inch barrel, you could say mini, but mighty. The double-stack magazine holds 15+1 total capacity. That's standard. All Kel-Tec firearms are made in the USA and come with a lifetime warranty as the original owner with proof of purchase. Sign up for the Kel-Tec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories. The P15 is an excellent choice if you're looking for concealed carry. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. Secure your world with Kel-Tec.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Do you see the president signing a National Defense Authorization Act that limits transgender rights, that rips out diversity training, and does exactly the opposite of what you said the president supports when it comes to access to reproductive rights?
Okay. It's very difficult to see the president supporting legislation that would make it harder for Americans to serve in uniform and to not be able to do so with dignity, would not be able to do so with the proper care that they need, both medical and mental care. It's very difficult to see that the president would ever sign legislation that would put our troops at greater risk or put our readiness at risk.
So that is John Kirby. I just need to touch on this audio because He's saying that the NDAA with that trans rights diversity training is going to put troops at greater risk and Biden won't sign it. Let's break this down. Welcome back to the show. It is your mean, hella mean curmudgeon today. Actually, I'm in a very good mood. Roided out, allergic reaction. Some of you expressed concern. They're like, you looked a little weird. Yes, because my whole face swelled up and I had a rash because I broke out to Augmentin. So I look like Sloth from the Goonies. I appreciate you joining me and not being super harsh about that when you're writing about the simulcast, because there were a couple of people who are like, I could tell your eye was all wonky. Thanks. It was swelled shut like at 2 hours before. So I appreciate it. You're so nice. God love you. Bless you. Pray for you. Anyway, so this piece, Kirby claims the NDAA without trans rights diversity. Well, okay, so explain to me what trans rights diversity. Let's break that down even more. Trans rights. D-A-F-U-Q. Is that? Don't say that out loud at work. I heard y'all. Don't do it. This is not Hollaback Girl. We're not brides, drunk bridesmaids on the dance floor trying to sing the bananas part. Don't. What is that even? Trans rights. They don't have rights? What do you not have a right to do? Explain.
You mean
pay for your surgery? Yeah. If you don't pay for my surgery, then you're denying my right to be trans. If you don't buy my next gun, I guess you're denying my Second Amendment rights. This is fun. Let's play this game.
Yeah.
This is my new favorite game. Just saying. If you don't buy my next plane ticket to Florence, then I guess you're against my free travel. Yeah. Right? If you don't buy my next computer, I guess you're against my free speech. Oh, this is so fun. This is my new favorite game. Isn't that what this is? It always boils down to some broke, thirsty person who's like, you won't pay for my stuff. And if you don't pay for my stuff and give me, you know, welfare, then you're against me doing it. No, just do it yourself, right? If you want to, look, if you are so dedicated to the cause that you're going to just invert your Frankenbeans into some kind of Franken copulatory organ, then by all means, I think it's wrong. I don't like aiding people in what I think is a mental illness. It's like, I'm not going to sit here and tell an anorexic, yeah, you are fat. You should not eat more. I'm not going to do that, right? I just feel like that's such a disservice to the person. And if you claim to be compassionate, I don't know why you would make someone easy in their struggle. You get help, you help, you know, be an asset into getting them out of it. That's the concept I don't understand, because the compassion isn't to keep someone in a bad spot. It's to help get them out of it. That's the compassion. So the whole rights thing, I don't know what they're being denied. It's like women who are like, we're being denied birth control. What? Because someone doesn't walk you in and pay for it like you're some escort? Shut up. Now the diversity training, what is that even about? What do you have to be trained on? If I did not work in this industry, guys, I would probably be, oh my gosh, I'd be on the street, I think, because I don't think I could live in this environment. Some of you all have a strength that I apparently lack, because I'd be slapping people right and left. We need diversity training. It's going to put our troops at risk. Well, what is going to put troops at risk? Somebody not being able to wear, a dude not being able to wear like prosthetic boobs and lipstick on the job? Is that what you're talking about? Because I'm pretty sure if we have this old senile fart knocker that gets us into, I haven't used that word in a while, gets us into World War III, I feel like no one's going to care, right? Bullets don't discriminate. And in the theater of war, bullets don't care. They just get the easiest. They want to try to get that. They want to try to pick off what they think are the weak points in our military. And when you are eroding military readiness because you're accommodating social experimentation as the priority, you are putting everyone at risk. And that's what puts everyone at risk. So this NDAA without trans rights diversity, you don't need that. Are you a fighting force? Honestly, like the people that I know that are in the military, what they seem to pride is or put emphasis on and what they care about is whether or not you can do the mission. Can you execute the mission? Can you accomplish the objectives? Are you an asset to your team? Can you support your team? Are you able to come in clutch if things go sideways? Are you able to totally fulfill your role as part of the team? That's what they care about. That's the identity. I mean, the military, in some respects, is one of the most equal outfits that's ever been created by government. I can't even believe I'm saying that about government, but I am. Because everyone has a purpose and everyone has a role. There is no role that is too small. There's no role. Everyone has served. And I don't mean that in terms of serving country. I mean, everyone has served in a position that makes them truly understand service. If you don't have, you know, something that might be, you know, by a civilian might be considered a lower status job done, then that actually can go and hurt the overall mission later. You never know how it manifests. And by that respect, it's one of the most equal things, the most equal things that's ever been created. Because that's equality. And that is where they get their strength from. Everyone has a particular skill set. And when you put it all together, it's like a giant badass Voltron. Right? Each one of the cats had their, do we really need to do this? I love that. Okay, sidebar. I not only had the cats that were like big, where you'd put the Voltron together and it was like a foot and a half tall. Like I had the big one. I also had the little ones. And then later on when they came out, the keychains, I had those too. Like that was my jam. Voltron was my jam. Each one of the cat pilots had their own particular set of skills, and then they all formed together to be giant badasses. It was an amazing thing. Love Voltron. But that's what the military's like. So this whole, well, we gotta have all, that's completely irrelevant to what the purpose of the military. And if you are pushing things that are irrelevant to the purpose of the military, you're the problem, dude. We need training against you. Actually, you need training on how to better fit in. So that's the big fight here. I was thinking about this last night, too. Now, y'all tell me, and feel free to voice up in the chat if you think I'm reading too much into this. So this was thinking last night. I'm like, So we got Biden signing this order to call up this particular type of reservists. I know there's a name for it, but for the sake of going, a particular type of reservist. At the same time, they're sitting here saying, oh, you're holding back these appointments, military appointments. You're holding back, you know, all this other stuff. It kind of does feel like, in a way, that they would hold NDAA and compromise over that. They would hold that against Republicans to try to get them to fold on that because they're calling up these reservists for NATO. Like, oh, look at this, all this stuff going down in NATO. All the more reason you guys better hurry the hell up and just get over your objections and support NDAA. To me, I think that's the strategy that they're going to use for this. I'm not saying that they came up with this idea to call up these reservists for that strategy, but I do think that a certain aspect of it was planned, at least as the ball got rolling. So that's a big thing. A big thing. So we're going to keep an eye on it. I got a lot more on it. It's Bastille Day. If you get the newsletter, I wrote a little bit about it. Now, I know we're not French, and you're like, I don't give a rat's backside about Bastille Day. You actually should. You want me to tell you why? Because I really feel, and I think everyone should have, I think everyone, every student should be forced to study Tocqueville. I do. And the reason being is because, you know, you have an amazing opportunity to really kind of understand the difference between, you know, the types of, you know, the motivations that get into what was really fomenting the revolutions over here. I'm pulling something up. I'm going to pull up my, because I wrote, I sent this out in our prep email, if you get it, and sent this out. Because the thing about this is, remember the there for a while, the slogan for Bastille Day, and that's when they stormed what was looked at as the old regime, the symbol of the old regime, the prison. Terror is the order of the day. That ended up being the phrase, that was a catchphrase for a while until it was changed to justice is the order of the day. Woke scolds are the modern day Jacobins. I really do feel like that. And I think that that's not beyond the realm of reality. I mean, they really are. They're the modern day Jacobins. Think about this. Using the wrong language, possessing the wrong things, professing support for the wrong things could send one to the court of public opinion, which is by itself a little revolutionary tribunal for penalty. That's exactly what was happening back in the day. The American Revolution was brought about by enlightenment. It was brought about by a virtuous desire for freedom. Freedom, what do you mean freedom? Freedom from. It was a desire to have freedom from. Whereas the French Revolution, boiling it down, and this is kind of comes down to a difference between John Locke and Jean-Jacques Rousseau. The French Revolution was about freedom too. Now, you might not think that from and to, that those are big differences, but they're gaping, major, dramatic differences. The American Revolution, like I said, was brought about by enlightenment, a virtuous desire for freedom, recognition and celebration of the individual, whereas the French Revolution was brought about, really, you had tyrants, grifters, power seekers, selfishness, and this desire to subjugate everyone in this mediocrity, this concept of a false equality. And how did these two things end? America remained free. France briefly overthrew its monarchy, only to be overtaken by a dictator, which was then followed by the Bourbon Restoration, which returned the pre-Napoleonic monarchy to the throne. So they didn't really actually succeed in keeping what they were pushing for. We are not the same. We're John Locke. They're Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Tocqueville knew this. I think his book, Democracy in America, which did this, and I think also the old regime and the French Revolution, he identified at one point, and this was actually fairly early on in the French Revolution, he identified liberty as no longer really being the driving cause for the French revolutionists. And I think that one of the worst things that we could do as Americans, and this is why, you know, we're not French, but I think you should pay attention to Bastille Day, because it was they were very similarly timed. One of the worst things that we could do is regress to ignorance with our understanding of freedom, because we are on a very slow slide to this quasi-French Revolution 2.0 here at home. You don't want your American Revolution to be French revolutionized. And I think that's something you need to remember every time Bastille Day comes up. We have a lot more on the way, including, I don't know if you guys seen some of the new Snow White stuff. Yeah. And puppet shows. I got some puppets. You know that, right? I was going to tell you guys that, but I got a couple. We're going to talk about that. Yeah, CRT and trans stuff with puppets. God help us all.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Hi, is this an okay time?
No.
Okay, surprise! I'm in Peru, and I'm at Machu Picchu. Isn't this just so beautiful? I'm here by myself, and I used to do a ton of solo traveling. I'm telling you, it's the best. If you could ever do a solo trip somewhere, it is such a good way to get to know yourself better. But I came here to feel something, you know what I mean? And I definitely have. I've done shaman ceremonies that were like 10 years worth of therapy. It was wild. I've seen a lot of llamas, and the people here are so kind. I feel very safe here. It's a little sad that I had to leave my country to feel safe, but that will get better eventually.
I just like out here to feel safe. What do you mean feel safe? I was just telling Kane. So that's a Dylan Mulvaney Bud Light ruiner person who said that he had to go all the way to Machu Picchu in Peru. I love how he shows up in designer duds. That's like a hike, dude. That's like a major hike. Like, and they only allow so many people to go up at a certain time. And if you ain't hauling your stuff, you got to have somebody help you. I was telling Kane, I've seen this guy papped. Like paparazzi, not like stirrups. Okay. I've seen this dude papped, taking his designer Prada on his arm, like Zsa Zsa Gabor, taking out his recycling. Which then again, I'm like, I don't know no chick. I have no friends, no lady friends who do that kind of stuff. Like, if that's what you think chicks do, they don't do it. Newsflash, they're like you. They don't do that kind of stupid stuff. They don't. I don't know why he feels like, I got a guy to feel safe. No one was attacking you, bruh. No one was attacking you. No, we just think you're ridiculous and you're offensive to women because you cosplay in an incredibly offensive, stereotypical manner. That's it. Nobody's attacking you. Just because someone disagrees with you or criticizes you, that's not the same thing as being attacked. My gosh, you're like, who is it, Voltaire, that said, let me not feel like I am being attacked when I am merely being disagreed with? I mean, it's an abridged quote, but you understand what I'm saying. This is just, it's so ridiculous. Fleeing to the mountain sanctuary of Machu Picchu. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I mean, yeah, see how long that lasts. Good heavens. We have a lot more on the way, including, are we going to go to World War III, number one? Is that what's happening here? Also, we got some 2024. We're going to get into some culture. The new Snow White looks bad. Stay with us.
Arizona.
Well, Mr. Chairman, though that was unbelievably inspiring, my amendment has nothing to do with whether or not colored people or black people or anybody can serve, okay? It has nothing to do with color of your skin, any of that stuff. What we want to preserve and maintain is the fact that our military does not become a social experiment. We want the best of the best. We want to have standards that guide who's in what unit, what they do. And I'm going to tell you guys right now,
so they're mad
the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, the North Koreans, they are not doing this because they want the strongest military possible. Gentlemen, I hope my colleagues on the other side can understand what we're doing. Thank you so much.
Maker, do they have
Mr. Speaker, it's going to be recognized to have the words colored people.
For what purposes, gentlelady, seek recognition?
I'd like to be recognized to have the words colored people stricken from the record. I find it offensive and very inappropriate.
What? Okay. Welcome back to the show. Where's Smod? Sweet meteor of death. Should be hurtling towards this rock. Just smash us all into bits. Oh, yeah. You're a lovable curmudgeon here, Dana Lash. You can listen to the radio program coast to coast. You can stream the show. You can watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, DirecTV, Channel 347. Sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. So it was Eli Crane who stood up on the House floor yesterday, late afternoon, and said, quote, colored people. That was his quote. And Joyce Beatty says it's racist. And that people of color is apparently what you're supposed to say. Now, I just wanted to, I'm trying to figure something out here. Because you have the NAACP. What does that stand for? National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Is there... What is the difference between, and I'm asking this, I'm looking at this, purely from an academic standard here. I'm looking at like the etymology of this word, because one has a preposition and one doesn't. One phrase has a preposition, one does not have a preposition. So why is the one with the preposition, does the preposition make it not offensive? I'm trying to understand, for the lack of a better way to say it, the etymology of the phrasing. Does the existence of the preposition make it somehow less offensive? If so, why? I'm being incredibly genuine in asking this. I'm not being a smartass. I will tell you if I am, or you'll hear me laugh. But I really genuinely, what is the explanation for that? Because you have, like I said, you have the NAACP that uses that phrase. So, and I don't think that Eli Crane, from what I saw on Twitter, Eli Crane messed up saying, quote, colored people and quote, people of color. And that's apparently what is the difference? Oh my gosh, they're not even hiding racism anymore. They're not even hiding racism. What? So apparently, they were saying that it's not. He was just mixing it. I don't know. And doesn't the phrasing of what is or is not offensive change almost all the time?
Yes, yeah. Especially these days.
So what is what's the presence of the preposition means? What exactly? I want to break this down for a moment because, I mean, now you. Oh my gosh, you have like everybody from Jim McGovern, all these GOP is not even hiding the racism. I don't think that he's trying to be racist, and apparently that's not what he was trying to do. Seriously, because of a preposition. Of is a preposition. Of. So, people of color. Could you apply this to something else? Like, you know, ice cream of strawberry. Or strawberry ice cream. I don't know. Like, is... Does that make... You know what I'm saying? One sounds like the days of your old English. One of them actually sounds like back in the day when they apparently... When racism was way more blatant. So, if we got to talk like old English style Monty Python. This is a Monty Python episode. What the hell happened? Did we fall through a wormhole and end up in an episode of Monty Python? Wait! You forgot the preposition! Without the preposition, it's basically a hard consonant. Just saying. Any ideas? Any ideas?
I mean, I have a genuine idea. Nothing that's going to make fun of anyone, but I believe that they actually, this is their way of avoiding an actual debate, just like they've done with all kinds of other faux outrage. They're avoiding the debate on this so they can just scream racism to actually discredit the person's point that he was trying to make.
Oh, I completely agree with that. I also think that if you think the phrase that Eli Crane used, he said colored people, if that's offensive, I think people of color is offensive. Isn't it?
Yeah.
How is that not offensive then? It's like people love vagina or vagina people. Like, is there, I'm just trying to figure, you know what I mean? It's a formula. Put different variables in. Jiminy Christmas. I hate everything. We're going to sit here and argue about the whole idea of prepositions and whether or not I can't deal. Now, I speaking of culture stuff, and we're going to get back into the quote unquote augmentation and Operation Atlantic Resolve and all of that stuff. I don't know. I had this. Have you seen the Disney Snow White? I love the people on the left who go to like these great pains to make, they're so offended by original stories that they go to great pains to make stupid remakes. And it seems like everything is a remake anymore or a sequel. So it's like technically a remake. And they go to these great lengths to redo films that are more in line with a Jacobin type society. And I'm going to start using that phrase now, I think, instead of woke schools on Bastille Day, because it makes so much more sense. I mean, it's completely appropriate. But then they think that you're overreacting if you remark about how much like it looks like hot trash. So they have these stills that are coming out from the new Snow White. I don't even know why they're remaking Snow White. I thought the one with what's her face, the chick who's all She's the same character in every movie. What's her face? Her name's right? She's in the vampire movie. The Twilight thing. Wasn't she in one and it sucked out loud? And it was Charlize Theron who was in it. It was just Huntsman.
You're talking about Kristen Stewart?
Yes. Huntsman. That was horrible. We don't need any. We're all still traumatized from that. So they're remaking this with... what was this chick's name? She was in West Side Story, wasn't she? Rachel Zegler. She's great in West Side Story. So back a little bit ago, Peter Dinklage, who was in Game of Thrones, and I think he's a great actor, he was complaining because, and at first I thought he was trying to be ironic, but he wasn't. He was upset because he didn't like the fact that Disney was remaking the Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. And he said that it was an insult. like, really, we're making this movie, you know, like this. He's like, take a step back and look what you're doing here. You're progressive in one way, but you're still making that blanking backwards story about seven dwarves living in a cave together. And so I love how these other dwarf, like other actors, what do you call them? Diminutive individuals? What do you call them? What is the acceptable phrase so I don't get like firebombed? What? Because everyone's overreacting anywhere.
I thought it was dwarf. It's not.
No, I don't think it's. Do they call it? That's not what they call them.
I'm pretty sure that's the acceptable.
That's not term. What is the phrase that is used. That's not.
Seriously?
That's like Lord of the Rings stuff.
So it's not dwarf?
I actually think. Can I just say, like, I've noticed. Like my kids, they, you know, they think apparently that dwarves are like the be all end all. Like that's, they're better than elves. They're better than any other fantasy character. Like that's the character that you want because they're incredible. Like they're the best character. So I just, you know, I actually think it's a compliment. But anyway, one of the actors, there's a Dylan Postel. He and a whole bunch of, are they little people or is that a slur? I don't even know anymore. Everything's a slur. Diminutive individuals. I just want to illustrate how ridiculous language is. We live in an Orwellian time. He said, I love what he said. He goes, quote, Peter Dinklage may be the biggest dwarf actor of all time, but it doesn't make him King Dwarf. He was mad because he said that Disney re-examined the casting for this after Dinklage complained and that Lorraine says it's little people. Okay. If I get hate, it's Lorraine's fault. It's all her fault. So... He was mad because Disney wasn't actually casting little people. And apparently a lot of actors who are little people were very excited about the film and they wanted these roles. And I don't know if you can see, so on the simulcast, we're showing one of the stills of the dwarves. They all look like hobos. And there's a chick in there. Well, there's not a chick. There are minors. Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go. There are minors. There's one little person in there. They're, you know, they had to get one. And then the rest of them are like, one of them's in a business jacket for the love. They look completely anachronistic. They look like they just shopped at Johnny Was. And then they decided to ramble on into this field. They were just at Johnny Was looking at the new fall looks. And then they amble into this field. And so a lot of these actors are livid. Because they said that Dinklage is being selfish and he's being like one actor said, quote, it makes me sick to my stomach to think there are seven roles for dwarves that can't get normal acting roles or very few and far between roles. And now they're gone because of this guy. Wow. Another one said, quote, when he was cast as a little person role in Lord of the Rings or in Game of Thrones or an elf or this or that other thing, those checks cashed fine. But now he wants to be progressive? Come on, man. Oh, he's totally right. All these actors are correct. This is the thing that I have like the biggest problem with is that because it's fantasy, you know, it's all about fantasy. Now, the other thing is that people are mad over Rachel Zegler being cast because she's Hispanic and she's being cast as Snow White. And I guess Snow White is racist now. I mean, it's a Northern European story. So, you know, I understand that. It would be like putting, in some respects, okay, so here. We have like, with our mail and all of that, we have to do our mail weird. We can't be like regular people and have mail sent to our home. So we have like this whole service that we have to use. And the guy who runs the service, super proud. Like, I think he's one of the most patriotic people I've ever met. He's Asian American. I've never heard anyone rant about anything more in my life than film and films being remade and recast. And he had said as an example for one thing, I think he was talking about Little Mermaid. He goes, it's like remaking Mulan and putting a white chick in it. I was like, oh my gosh, that actually makes sense. He's right though. I get it. I mean, and why do we have to remake? I mean, there's so many amazing stories from every different culture. There are so many movies from different cultures that no one, or so many stories that people could make into really awesome movies that they're not. I feel it's like laziness. I would love to see those brought to the screen, but they're not doing it. We got a whole lot more to touch on that you don't want to miss as we get moving. I mean, my gosh, I could sit here and talk about like a number of things, a number of films. It's like comics that you could do, right? Where it's like you have, you know, minority leads and all this stuff that are really good. I mean, good heavens. Anyway, all right. I know, we got to get going.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right. So first and foremost here, fentanyl production has shifted from China to Mexico. Remember when I said this before? I questioned this and even Dan Crenshaw disagreed with me. Yeah, well, this is what a House panel was told. They said Mexican cartels have taken over fentanyl production and they operate on an industrial scale. This is from Homeland Security Investigations. It's chaired by Clay Higgins out of Louisiana. He held the hearing and they were saying that the DEA seized 58 million fentanyl-laced pills. Remember, the whole discussion was how the Mexican cartels were trying to make more money by having more of the elements in place to actually make this stuff, as opposed to getting it from China, getting so much from China. So the bulk of the production is shifted from China to Mexico. It's become a lot more sophisticated. This is what I said, and this is one of the things that Dan Crenshaw didn't agree with. Remember, we had a big discussion about this. They said cartels are making billions by trafficking. The human trafficking has actually aided them in being able to, for the lack of a better way to say it, grow their business. I mean, ultimately, that's, you know, really what has happened here. Let's see here. Tucker Carlson is said to be creating a new media company. He's looking to raise hundreds of millions of dollars. He's been working with his old college roommate who is in media and business, according to Wall Street Journal, to facilitate this. It looks like they're going to use Twitter as a backbone. Super interesting. John Kerry erupts after his private jet use is mocked in a House hearing. He denies ever owning one. Oh, because it's his wife's jet. Shush up. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Well, there's no escaping the fact that when you have more severe weather events, both them happening more often and them getting more severe, that's going to affect every form of transportation. We're assessing what those Northeast floods have been doing to the roads in New York State and in particular in Vermont. And of course, that's going to affect flight operations. So there's a reality in front of us that, we're doing everything we can in the long run fight against climate change to stop this from getting any worse than it has already gotten.
It's called Summer Slick. That's what it's called. Gosh, just killing my soul. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. We were all in like an 80s groove. And then we had to play this guy. I think we should just like chuck everything else in the show. Let's just do like 80s karaoke for the rest of the day, right? Let's get some synth pop going. Anyway, welcome back. You can listen across the country. You can do all kinds of fun stuff. You can watch the simulcast as well. So Secretary Mayer, also Vice Admiral of the canoe fleet at Camp Wimpy Tonka, Mayor Secretary Poop Booty Juice, don't correct me with how I say his name. I am saying his name the way that the illustrious Lawrence Donald, the great Shakespearean commentator at MSNBC, and our illustrious President of the United States, the most well-spoken man in elected office, Joe Biden. I'm saying his name like those two gents. So when you got, severe weather events, it's going to affect transportation. He's talking about some of the flights that have been canceled and all this other stuff. And then he's trying to say it's not because it's summer and stuff's hot and storms break out. I mean, that's typical. He's like, no, it's the climate change. It may be because I say this to you just to let you know my state of mind. I don't mean to keep repeating it. I'm going to bring the tugboat in, so bear with me. Had an allergic reaction to Augmentin. My whole face, like, swelled up. I look like Sloth from the Goonies. I swelled up. It was crazy. Rash. It's like the first day I've been able to actually wear anything. I'd, like, kept on doing, the show had to go on. But I'm on a massive amount of steroids. Now, I don't know if these are the type of steroids that affect your mood or not. Right, Kane? Because it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's not like, bodybuilder roids. But at the same time, whenever I hear this turd talk about climate change, first thing I want to do is I want to buy a whole bunch of lawnmowers and run them. And I just want to get a whole bunch of big, giant cars, drive them. Like, I drive a gas guzzler proudly. That thing guzzles gas. I have a very inappropriate simile or comparison for this, but it guzzles gas. It's like Hunter Biden with a Coke rock. I mean, it guzzles gas like Hunter Biden snorts Coke. Love my gas guzzler. Hey. You know, for the earth. I'm fighting global cooling. Thank you. That's what I was told in my weekly reader when I was in elementary school. We looked forward to that every month, the weekly reader in the book cart. I could only afford to get one thing. Had to make it good. But I was reliably told, I remember the global cooling thing, and I was like, wow, does that mean penguins are going to be down here? I mean, now it's this. This is, it's all just a, it's a welfare scheme to get your income. That's all it is. But he's like, oh, no, there's no escaping the fact that when you have, you mean it's summer, Poot. So, you know, there's no escaping the fact that when it's summer, it's warmer outside. Great job at being obvious. Is that your, is that what your job is, Secretary of the Department of Obvious? Anyway, I just can't deal. I can't deal with this stuff. All right, so a couple of things. We were talking about how the GOP, they passed their version of NDAA in the House. Democrats are vowing to push back in the Senate because they don't like their DEI amendments being removed. Now, if you missed earlier in the week when we were talking about NDAA and what was included in there, the NDAA is the National Defense Authorization Act. This is the military funding that previously has had no issue finding any kind of bipartisan support, blah, 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 blah. It wasn't until Democrats decided, hey, let's get froggy and add some stupid stuff in this, right? They wanted to include things like, oh, well, if you have a trans soldier who wants to invert his Frankenbeans into some sort of Frankenginer, then let's go ahead and do it. That's, you know, taxpayer-funded surgery right there. Or the opposite. If someone wanted to cut some flesh off their thigh and have a makeshift Frankenween, then let's go ahead and, you know, taxpayer funded surgery, you know, to better. Are you OK? To better affirm your quote unquote gender, whatever. I said it and it's true. I mean, you shouldn't be appalled that I said it. You should be appalled that people in D.C. actually proposed it as a as something that you and all of us should pay for. Right. Good heavens. I mean, it wasn't bad enough that we were sitting here studying bats and form and gain of function. Now we're doing Franken-copulatory organs. No. The other thing that they added on there was they wanted to include taxpayer funding of not just abortions as birth control for soldiers, but even transportation expenses if they had to go out of state. DEI programming, that means all those books, Ibram Kendi books about white rage, all that stuff. All of these things, right? That was all the stuff that they had included. And so Republicans were saying, no, you know, this would have already passed if you guys would have just kept all this stuff out. So now, last night, we got the fun little thing where Biden's, he's signed an order calling for up to 3,000 troops for Operation Atlantic Resolve in Europe. It's a NATO thingy. Now, there's a couple of different ways to look at this. And then I'll tell you how I'm looking at it. One way to look at it is, oh, well, he's greenlit Finland's entrance into NATO. You know, this is a way maybe to show that, you know, we're committed to make them feel a little bit better about this stuff, you know, whatever. Oh, this has been going on since 2014, Operation Atlantic Resolve, which started when Russia first invaded Crimea, annexed Crimea. This has been going on this whole time, whatever. It's just reservists, you know, that's not a big deal. So it actually kind of is because of the type of reservists that they're calling in. These are people who just recently retired. And so they retired with the caveat of they have a window in which they can call, they can be, for the lack, I guess, reactivated, called back into service for active duty. So that's what this is. Now, John Kirby and everyone else at DOD and Pentagon can sit here and say 6 ways to Sunday that this is not any kind of escalation or they're not sending additional boots on the ground. They're augmenting what is already there. But you, when you augment something, that means you add more of it. That's what augment means. It's like, I have some ice cream. By the way, sidebar, I had a great thing of ice cream yesterday. It was a raspberry chocolate truffle. It was so good. It was a new place in town. It was amazing. But it's like if I wanted another scoop of that, I wanted to augment my existing serving. What would I do, Kane, in that event? If I wanted to augment the ice cream that I had in my cup, basic definitions for Democrats.
You would add more or add toppings?
I would add more to it. That's correct. You get an A. Yay. I would add more to it. That's exactly right. So it's different. It's different because of that. And that's what makes it a little bit more worrisome. I feel like, you know, if you want World War III, this is how you get World War III. Honestly, this is a great way to go. Now, think about this, too. You want to know why recruitment is down. We have recruitment that's down. We have a real, I think it's affected morale. And then you have Democrats who are blasting Republicans over NDAA. So I honestly wonder if they're not going to try to use that as a way to say, this is what we have to have NDAA. We have to get this passed. You guys better get over your objections to all of the wokery and the unnecessary taxpayer funded stuff that we have in this, because look what's happening. I mean, ugh, we could have this. So I'm concerned because I don't feel, and then Biden, of course, telling Ukraine, well, yes, as soon as the war is over, you can join NATO. No. What does NATO get out of Ukraine joining NATO? Not a singular damn thing. That brings more problems to NATO, which already, you don't want to bring anything that's a drag on NATO. We already got countries that can't even meet the bare minimum of paying a percentage of their own GDP to their own defense. That was part of the agreement. And NATO nations have to pay X amount of their GDP towards their own defense. So it's not one nation that's funding the defense of everybody else. That's what Trump and Angela Merkel got in the big fight over. They got in a big fight because, and that's when she was sitting there looking like a little toddler with her arms crossed, and she was all mad at him. And that's because she was being asked by the United States to have, you know, meet the 2% minimum GDP requirement for defense. Now, other countries have stepped up spending for defense in recent years, and that's a good thing. But to add Ukraine to NATO, that adds a whole different set of problems, because you still have this contested area. And there are so many things. I mean, you could get involved into a greater conflict with or without Russia just because of the different separatists and the different fighting factions that are in Ukraine currently. So there's a lot of things to consider there. There is no, and it's perfectly, completely, if it's fair for Ukraine to ask what Ukraine gets out of something, why is it not fair for the United States to ask what the United States gets out of it? I'm so tired of that. We have every right to ask that. That's just a logical question. Finland, Sweden, that makes more sense. It's a strategic area. They've been an ally. They know what they're doing. They've done a lot on their own already. It makes some sense. They're not contesting any land space either. I mean, this is a land dispute. And there are a lot of neocons out there that fight that narrative. They say it's not a land dispute. Then describe it, because you can't tell me a dying empire is looking to push beyond the borders of what it already has. It's not looking to retake Latvia. It's not looking to retake Estonia. It's not looking to retake India. None of this. It took Crimea because of Sevastopol, because of the deep water port there. It's always wanted that. And in the past, if you go back in history, originally was part of it, then they lost it back and forth. I get so tired of a lot of the neocons. They try to shut you up by saying if you disagree with the premise that a dying empire is trying to expand its borders back to its old Soviet state, then you're called a Russian or Putin apologist, which is the same thing as calling someone a racist anymore. They're just trying to shut you up by impugning your character when you're actually pointing out something very, very, you know, innocuous and very, very valid politically in this geopolitical conversation. They're the ones who can't handle it. Now, as it relates to, you know, this, the augmentation, I mean, I just don't, we can do that, but we can't secure our border. There's a, Tucker Carlson's been doing this thing, this ongoing thing where he's been questioning some of these, I'm not going to play all the audio. He's been questioning some of these politicians. He asked Tim Scott a very interesting question, because he was like, well, wait a minute. You know, you have Mexico, especially now. He didn't add this, but I'm thinking especially with the story coming out now, one that we've all have known for some time, that you have Mexican cartels that are expanding their businesses by bringing a lot of these, sourcing their own elements instead of relying so much on the Chinese and moving the bulk of production to Mexico as opposed to getting some of this from China. And it's a very sophisticated op. You know, that's a whole operation there. You know, they've killed American nationals. There's a whole bunch of stuff happening. You know, you can sit here and you can fortify whatever in with NATO in Europe, in Eastern Europe, but you can't at our southern border. Like, what, we're treating Mexico like more of an ally than, you know, I mean, I think it's a legitimate question, but it's just funny to watch all these people dance around it. Tim Scott was apparently for sending those cluster bombs to Ukraine. I know we're going to talk about some 2024 stuff. From everything I know on the insider track, all the stuff where, oh, big donors are looking at Tim Scott instead. Literally no one is saying that. And I've asked, I have to promise some of the people, this is how journalism works. Even though I'm a commentator, I started as a journalist. But you got to ask people, can I get this on background? Or, you know, I'll keep you off, just so you can get information to put things in a better perspective. But you also want to protect your source so they keep telling you stuff so you still have that line in. But everything that I'm hearing from people, that is such a BS narrative. That's a lie that's being put out by the media and it's being seized upon by some factions of different primary groups. So it's an absolute lie, because I immediately reached out to two people that I knew and I'm like, what's up with this? So just FYI, we got some 2024 stuff. We have more culture war, of course. We have the latest with the Rona, because a coronavirus subcommittee released a bombshell email showing kind of, I mean, this sort of goes into what we already knew. Fauci knew about gain of function research. A lot of them knew, even the people who were writing these letters and studies saying that lab leak theory was ridiculous. Privately, they were like, oh, that totally happened. We're going to talk about all of that and more, so you don't want to miss.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All I'm going to say is these gators need to calm down in Florida. A Florida man got attacked by a 7-foot gator while he was on his morning walk, say deputies, in Naples, Florida. He's recovering in the hospital. He was out, Collier County Sheriff's Office. He was walking around. He gets up at 5. He walks around in the morning. He was in his golf course community. Gator came up and bit him right on the leg. They said that the deputies arrived. They were on the scene, provided first aid. A second deputy kept eyes on the gator. He told it where it was, told the trapper that came where it was. So it's alligator mating season, and apparently they're super aggressive right now. And so residents are told any body of water or vegetation now, apparently, too, be very cautious because a gator could have a nest there. So this, they're trying to figure out if this was a female gator and whether or not there was a nest near where the attack occurred, because that's apparently, you know, and it could be in vegetation right by the water. So you just don't walk around. Just hover. Just if you're in Florida, just hover off the ground. They can't jump, at least. Right. I mean, we do know that much. Yeah, I mean, I Jiminy Christmas. Okay, I have like a million. First off, let me do this. A horse was stolen by a thief on a bicycle. I don't even know how that happens. This is in Orlando. This is sent by Florida woman Amber. Orlando, she sends nothing inappropriate this time. Orlando police are searching for a bicyclist accused of riding off with a stolen horse. How do you? It was 3:15 in the morning. They pedaled their little bike there, and then get this. You would think they would ride the no. They pedaled away with the horse in tow. You heard that right. They got the horse off the trailer. Then they climbed back on their bike and pedaled away with the horse behind. Now, this horse, according to Paso Fino Horse Association, has a distinctive appearance, and it's known for its very smooth, natural gait. They're still looking for the person. Is this not nuts? That's crazy. Gets back on the bike and pedals away and just, you know, trot, 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 has the horse there. A 19-foot, 125-pound invasive python was captured again in Naples. That's where that dude got bit by that gator. Right. And by some people who've never been python hunting before. Jake Willary, he and his mom woke up to a text in the middle of the night. And it was a picture of her son, and they all had the snake on their shoulders. And she goes, well, that's great. It's 125 pounds, 19 and a half foot long. That's crazy. But they were able to capture it. It's, man. And they found a Burmese python nest that had 111 eggs, because it's like, it's killing all the local, indigenous species in Florida. Stick with us. Another hour on the way.
You know, the Third World War very quickly. So why not force a peace?
How would you do that?
Well, you could tell Ukraine, and they are a client state of the United States, without American backing, there's kind of no Ukraine. We're literally paying the salaries of their bureaucrats. We want you to sit down, as they tried to do, but were stopped by our government, and stop this war. Yeah. And reach a peace as one does, where both sides, you know, concede some of their interests. Like, why wouldn't that be in our interest to do that?
I think the faster we get to peace, the better off we are. What we don't want to do, from my perspective, is allow ourselves to ask for a premature peace that cannot be achieved as the alliances continue to come together. To the extent that we can find our path out of this situation, the better off we are.
So what's the point at which we'll know that we've achieved our goal? Just and I say that within the context of having watched 20 years of occupation in Afghanistan, where nobody could answer the question, what's the point?
Yes.
And no one in Congress ever asked that question, amazingly. So what is the specific goal here?
Yeah, so I would say that the objective should be for Zelensky and Ukraine to be able to achieve victory by maintaining as much of their territory as they possibly can, and then seeing the resources that we've deployed, along with our Western alliances, achieving the peace that I believe comes when you get these two folks to sit down and have a conversation that allows them to determine where those lines will be drawn for the next 100 years.
That's a weird answer. That's a really weird answer. So this is the candidate forum that Tucker Carlson is participating in. And he's spoken. He made Mike Pence really mad. Wasn't very happy. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this third hour. Already it's our third hour. Top of this third hour here on Friday. And it's an interesting thing. I've been watching it. We've been watching some of this, and he's talking with Pence now. He's been asking a lot of questions as to Ukraine, and he got into it with Asha Hutchinson. Did I give you? I think it's like 6 minutes long though, because we're like pulling this stuff out. He apparently, Asha Hutchins was, I guess. It seemed like he was sort of resisting, I think, kind of the position that conservatives have taken on the whole medically unnecessary gender reassignment surgery. Yeah, listen, this is just some of it from this 6 minute clip. Just some of it.
Is it treatment to prevent him from going through the natural process of adolescence? How is that treatment? It seems not like treatment. It seems like something else.
Well, you have to, Tucker, I hope that we'll be able to talk about some issues. I know that.
Well, this is one of the biggest issues in the country, and I think every person in this room would agree that it is a central issue, because these are children who are being altered permanently, and you can defend that alteration, that change, if you like, but there's really no debate about whether or not it's permanent. And so I think it's fair to ask you in a calm, rational, and I very much hope polite way, why you would support that.
Ooh. He had said that, you said that kids should be able to choose their gender and their parents should be, the state doesn't have any role in getting involved. That's what he asked him, because that's something that apparently that Hutchinson has said before. Actually, that is. I remember he was doing this interview. That was part of my whole criticism, where I was saying, why are some of these candidates trying to run to the right or the left of Ron DeSantis? Because it was after the parental rights bill was signed, and you had a lot of these candidates coming out. And I remember Hutchinson was one who came out and was saying that. And I'm like, why are you trying to run to the right of DeSantis on this? This is the dumbest thing. Why are you doing this? Stop it. That's you're watering down your Republican position because this guy, you think it's a loss to agree with him on something? You're that weak of a candidate? If you agree with someone on an issue and you're running against them in a primary and you cannot articulate how you might be better than them still, and your choice is to try to look more liberal than they are, you are not a good candidate. I keep forgetting Hutchinson's running, right? Like, why is Chris Christie getting involved in this? Shouldn't he be on a closed beach somewhere? Like, why is he in this? It's not personal. It's politics. It doesn't make any sense. But yeah, he made Pence mad. Do we have anything of Pence? Because him and Pence got into it a little bit. He's asking hard questions, which I appreciate. I don't know why Trump wouldn't participate in this. I think DeSantis is going to be there. But he was going with Mike Pence. I feel like Mike Pence didn't talk smack about his, the other half of his ticket until after he got out of office. Right? I don't like that. I don't like people who hold their tongue and don't talk smack about, who just don't do that. I to me, that looks cowardly. Listen to this. This is a little bit of this back and forth.
You are distressed that the Ukrainians don't have enough American tanks. Every city in the United States has become much worse over the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Drive around. There's not one city that's gotten better in the United States. And it's visible. Our economy has degraded. The suicide rate has jumped. Public filth and disorder and crime have exponentially increased. And yet your concern is that the Ukrainians, a country most people can't find on a map, who've received tens of billions of U.S. tax dollars, don't have enough tanks. I think it's a fair question to ask, like, where's the concern for the United States in that?
Well, it's not my concern. Tucker, I've heard that routine from you before, but that's not my concern. I'm running for president of the United States because I think this country's in a lot of trouble.
Oh, love. We're not doing
campaign speech. I think Joe Biden has weakened America at home and abroad.
I heard that absolutely correctly, right?
I think he was trying to say to Tucker that he wasn't concerned about the Ukrainian tanks, but it didn't come off.
Oh, it sounded horrible.
Sounding like that.
That sounded awful.
Wow.
Well, it's not my concern. I mean, and then he goes into the campaign spiel. Don't. That's not going to work. Don't do that. Oh, my gosh. That's pretty, it's not going out real well. Yeah, there was the one point where he was going back to Hutchinson. He was saying, you know, because Hutchinson had opposed schools, pushing trans bathrooms, supporting parents, helping and all this stuff. And he said, kids should be able to choose their gender. He's like, I don't understand that. He's like, and you heard that part. Why would you call it treatment? And he was saying, he goes, if you have a child born a boy and they say, I want to become a girl, he hasn't got through puberty, how's that treatment? And then Hutchinson goes, Tucker, I hope we'll be able to talk about some issues. Well, that's an issue. That's like literally one of the issues. I hope we'll be able to talk about the issues that is like one of the issues you're bringing up with me right now. Is that what you got getting ready to roll right there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen to this for the love.
At children and what they're challenged with in life. I think it's important that in the most sensitive issues that parents are able to guide them through that challenge. And so I don't like the schools pushing transgenderism. I don't want the schools, for example, when President Obama issued the order from the Department of Education that you ought to have bathrooms in the schools that the children can choose what their gender is and go to which bathroom they think they are that day. I said that is not consistent with the law. I said that...
But you said that children should be able to choose their gender and their parents should be able to affirm that, and the state has no role in getting involved. So how is that different? You're saying that a child shouldn't be able to choose a bathroom, but he can choose his sex? I don't understand.
Let me finish
what I said.
Let me finish.
Oh, I hope you will.
If you don't mind.
Well, please do.
And the finish is that I told Obama they were wrong. I said it publicly that the school districts can ignore that guidance. And so that's where I think this the government should not be pushing an agenda in our schools. And that's what I oppose. And so I want the government to stay out. I want the parents and communities and our faith to guide us through these difficult decisions. And so I'm a parent, and whenever I think it's very important that if a child goes to a teacher and says, I think I'm a boy, but I think I might ought to be a girl, well, the school, and they want to do something about it, the parents ought to know about that. And so, like, New Jersey is totally wrong in suing the school districts that want to be able to tell parents. These are fundamental principles that parents have to have information.
Well, then why were you so against it when they did it in Florida? Why did he come out and act like it was something that was so bad when they did this in Florida? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Now he's like, you know, he's kind of caught, like cornered, and so he's trying to walk out from that. That's what it looks like. Man. Honestly, you know, the 2024 race is really only between two people. It's only between, in terms of the primary, it's only between Trump and DeSantis. Everyone else is a distraction. It's true. They are. You can be upset about it, but it doesn't make it any less a reality. It doesn't somehow diminish the truthfulness of that reality. It's everyone else is a distraction. Nikki Haley's a distraction. Tim Scott is a distraction. He's not getting... Tim Scott doesn't even, like, rate and poll well in the top. I mean, the only people who are in contention in the primary, it's Trump and DeSantis. Pence is not... He doesn't have a shot in hell. Chris Christie, there's a guy running out of Texas. He doesn't have a shot in hell. A lot of these people run just to increase their profiles, raise some money for themselves, get a book deal or get a cable news contributorship. You know, that's kind of it. Or they'll be stalking horses for somebody else.
which we've seen a couple of those already. So there's and this, I think, kind of showcases these are a bunch of not serious candidates. That's not, you're not a serious candidate. And when you're acting like, oh, we got to intervene in Ukraine and we got to do all of this stuff. Do you understand people don't give a rat's ass about that right now because they see lawlessness and a crime rate in their cities here at home. They see a lawless border. I mean, I just had the headline for you about Mexico now centralizing complete control of and manufacturing production of fentanyl, etc. I mean, a very sophisticated op just right over the border. It's making them even more powerful and richer than ever. And they were able to do this and facilitate this with financing from their human smuggling trade that was created by the policies that have created the open border. I mean, we've got major problems. We're in an area of where we got inflation. We're broke. And you're talking about spending more tax dollars to settle a dispute between two foreign entities over land. That's not the land that I'm concerned about. Ukraine's border is not what taxpayers are concerned about. Taxpayers are concerned about our borders. Taxpayers are concerned about our jobs. Taxpayers are concerned about our livelihoods, our future, and our security. And a lot of these candidates so far that have been talking today, they don't seem to get it. We got headlines on the way. Also coming up, a friend of mine, he also did the logo for my program. He used to, I don't know if I can talk about it. So he used to be an animator for Disney. And he got so mad and so fed up and so done, he left. He was one of the first people, he left years ago, like 6 years ago, left and moved to Tennessee. He was done with it, livid. And I know you've seen his work. He's done stuff that you've seen. Anyway, he's going to be joining us here coming up after headlines. But we got a lot to hit as we get moving.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right. So first, I'm like still looking at some of these videos that are coming out from this forum, and it's just devastating. Let's see here. Dollar's epic drop is sending the franc and yen surging as traders are weighing which way they're going to go in terms down the federal path. Comes from Yahoo Finance. And this has to do with a 14-month low in the U.S. dollar rippling through global currency markets as traders are considering the impact of cooling U.S. inflation on the Federal Reserve's most aggressive tightening cycle in a generation. It's the Swiss franc, by the way, that rose to the strongest levels since 2015 against U.S. Japanese yuan climbed up more than 1% on the day to consolidate gains below 140 per dollar. The euro is up to $1.11. The British pound $1.30. They're super strong. Ooh, gosh. Makes me a little nervous. Let's see. Outrage as the UK is handing China. Why? About $40 million in aid. Now, this comes from a British public, the British Express. Handouts come amid tense relations between the UK and the commie superpower. It's Sir Ian Duncan Smith. He said it's time to stop giving China foreign aid. Why is Britain sending China any money at all? It's from the Independent Commission for Aid Impact. They found that overseas aid to Beijing was about 48 million pounds. And they raised concern about any kind of lack of transparency in this at all whatsoever. Like, where is the transparency? Why in the world would anybody? No, heavens. Also, a couple of other things. George Will, who nobody listens to over at the Washington Post, boldly predicts that neither Trump nor DeSantis will get the GOP nomination. He's pulling for a neocon, is what he's doing. So he's very, just so you know that, he wants that. The serial killer on Long Island has been arrested over, how do you say this, Gilgo Beach murders. And this was announced this morning, he's due in court. And he was arrested. He was described as an average Joe, which goes to show you anybody can be evil. I mean, it's horrific. A 59-year-old married architect at a New York City firm. He was caught after DNA from the hair of a victim matched that of his. And it was taken by investigators from a discarded pizza crust. Ew. In January. And he also went to school with Billy Baldwin. He was arrested. He's one of the so-called Gilgo 4. He's tied to the arrest of those women who were found wrapped in burlap within days of each other in late 2010. And apparently there were other six who are being considered as being connected. But he's being described as a serial killer. The more I look at him, the more serial killer-esque he looks. So coming up, culture. We got some fun new things for kids to talk about. We'll talk with a friend of mine about it. Stay with us.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Little massive attack to bring us into this. So this is the teaser video. You can't see it, obviously, if you're listening across the country in the radio program, which you can listen across the country radio. You can stream the show. You can watch the simulcast of the program as well. Channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook. And it's there's so much garbage out there. It's like very difficult, I think, for especially when we've been discussing all of the books in schools and how everything is just so engineered to be DEI and CRT and historically inaccurate and not fun either, because everything is so preachy and so you're lectured to and it's boring. My gosh, kids today, I feel so bad for you because everything sucks out loud. It's so horrible. And a lot of it's coming from like the old fuddy-duddies in Gen X. Like, what happened to Gen X? Why is this? Is this boomer stuff? No offense, boomers, but what is happening here? And so I was pretty stoked when, actually, this sounds really mean how I'm going to say it. A friend of mine who lived in LA and worked for a very famous company. And when he announced he was leaving and he was leaving LA behind and he was done with all of it, I mean, it sounded like he was having an existential crisis kind of, but he was done with LA and done with all of that. And I was so excited because, you know, that he was leaving it. And I knew that there were going to be greater things on the horizon for him. But he just was so disillusioned by all the wokery and everything else. And I think that was, he was like one of the first people out of the wave of people that were leaving LA. One of the first creators, one of the first artists to like finally say enough is enough and leave. And so now after this cocoon stage, he's come out with, well, he's been doing a lot of really cool stuff, but he's come out with a really good, it's like a 13-series graphic novel for, I would say, young adults, really for all ages. And it's called Silence, Do Good. And it's a really cool concept on Ben Franklin. And it incorporates AI. And it's kind of matrixy. And it has it's a really good premise because we're really kind of rolling towards this world anyway, where everybody's online. Everybody lives in a, you know, quasi-virtual reality now as it is. AI is becoming incredibly prevalent. A lot of people are going to be out of jobs. We've seen the war robots and the robot dogs and the fighting robots and all of this stuff. I mean, my gosh. So now we have Ben Franklin ripped from his own timeline. And I think it's a really cool concept. And we're going to talk to my friend Sean Salter about this. And you can find him at Salty Draws. And he is an award-winning creator and writer and illustrator. And he left the, what he calls the People's Republic of California. And he's been in the business for decades now. He joins us now via Skype. You have like the coolest studio ever, by the way, I have to say. Welcome. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I love the concept on this because you started, correct me if I'm wrong on this, because you kind of started, you know, feeling this out years ago, really even before AI exploded within the past, you know, 15 months. Now companies are like, oh my gosh, we're trying to catch up to the AI revolution. And that's kind of what this is, because it's Ben Franklin. It's a world that's, it could be 10 years from now, where everything is really dominated by software and AI and algorithms. And we all respond to that. It's this artificially constructed world. And you have Ben Franklin, who is, you know, the protagonist. And now we're trying to have another revolution, so to speak. Very interesting timing, by the way, on Bastille Day. Tell me about this.
It's just a really exciting project that I've been working on for a very long time, kind of on the side as I work on all the other stuff that you know that I work on. And really what it is for me is I love American history. and I love, I'm a conservative. And I you kind of became disillusioned not only with what the woke left is doing, but on even on our side, we're not really telling stories yet. We're lecturing, we're preaching, we're doing data, and we're doing logic and reason, which is great. But I'm like, I want to have fun. And there's a, I wanted to harken back
where's
to like
the whimsy?
C.S. Lewis. What's that?
Where's the whimsy? That's what you're
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, like I wanted to do something like with J.R. Tolkien. It's very, there's morals there. There's a good story there. There's value there. But it's fun, and it's a world you can get lost in. And that's what I'm doing with this.
And this is a, it's, I love, obviously, I love the artwork. For people who don't know, you did the art, you did my logo. You've done a lot of the stuff that people are used to seeing. You've done that, talking with our friend Sean Salter. Salty Draws is the website. And Silence Do Good is the series of graphic novels. And it's, you have what, 13 issues that are coming out, correct?
Yeah, 13 issues. It'll make comprise of 4 volumes.
That's awesome. And so this, Ben Franklin, so tell me about this, because I mean, it's everybody knows Ben. Everybody knows old Ben Franklin, right? Everybody knows old Ben Franklin, the air bathing Ben Franklin, the guy who's like somewhat eccentric, you know, but also incredibly wise. He's sort of the temperate member of the founders. He's the one who kind of, I mean, you got to have everybody, a guy in every group that kind of keeps everyone back and is the wise counsel. That's sort of how he has always been. And historically, that's how he was. This is young Ben Franklin. This is the Ben Franklin of when he was writing under Ms. Silence Do Good, because no one, the Current wasn't publishing his stuff. And so he decided to be really, you know, snotty about it and send it, you know, using these pseudonyms and all of this. Tell me about this though, because this is young Ben Franklin. He's kind of, for the lack of a better way to put it, he's sort of like a superhero, but an accessible superhero, because his power is wit and intelligence.
Yeah. And it takes place with Ben Franklin being 18 years old when he traveled to England to secure a printing press for the newspaper that he was starting. And he gets stuck there for 3 years because the mayor of the city that he lived in kind of reneged on the deal. So this is saying, was he in England or was he kidnapped and trapped in a VR program for 3 years?
Because that's sort of, we're questioning kind of, in this world, we're sort of questioning, I mean, it is very existential. You're questioning existence. We're questioning, you know, where everyone is so online, and in this world, everyone is so online, everyone engages, everything is online, everything is AI, it's all virtual reality. What is real, what isn't real? And so through, you know, without giving everything away, like through, you know, a loophole, he ends up time traveling.
And really what it is it's kind of questioning, what is man's destiny and purpose in a life that is so virtual? Ooh. What is man supposed to do? What are they supposed to accomplish? Because there's always a destiny. There's always a purpose for each individual human being. And that kind of might get lost in a world of AI and robots and automation. And so it kind of explores that. But while it also, I'm attacking the attacks on masculinity and the feminization of young boys. That'll be a story that gets explored, as well as seeing really cool stories in American history,
yeah,
like George Washington crossing the Delaware.
I love that. And I love the celebration of masculinity as well. Really, I mean, anymore, all you have to do is have a strong male lead, and that's considered toxic anymore.
Yeah, it's gotten a little ridiculous.
So how did you draw on, because I know you're a big fan of history, so when you're creating young Ben Franklin, I mean, everything that we know, I mean, we know that he was, you know, devoted. He had a great work ethic. He was devoted to his work. We know that he was very sarcastic and he was very witty and very creative. Mm-hmm. What did you draw on or in order to really bring this character and fully well-rounded to life in the series?
I mean, really just his writings and biographies about him. He's such a rich character and there's so much there and we have so much to pull from. Of just what we know and what we can read from, you know, his own journals. It's really just pulling from that and then imagining what that would look like as an 18-year-old before he has all the knowledge and the wisdom. So we're going to see a Ben Franklin that's not necessarily that astute scholar, but more of an 18-year-old kind of figuring it out and growing into that character that we know.
And he, and also because you don't, I've noticed you don't really make him anachronistic throughout the entire series. I mean, he actually fits into, if that makes sense, he sort of comports to the time that he is in. He doesn't always stay like ye old young Ben Franklin from the days of yore. Like he becomes like a modern dude.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with just making it relatable, because it's about who he is as a character, not necessarily the dressing of that fancy you know, pre-Victorian type world.
Why did you choose him to as the vehicle for this?
He's just, I look at him as the most prolific American founding father. He's a very interesting guy. I figured with a sci-fi story, it really works because he was a scientist. He was an inventor. And I want to explore all that about him, his inventive side. In the series, he literally invents a turkey robot because he loves turkeys, as we know. He wanted that to be the national bird. And so why wouldn't he, through steampunk technology, invent a little turkey robot friend?
I love that. I remember that story. He wanted the turkey to be, I'm so glad it's the eagle, but I did love his defense of the turkey. I mean, absolutely. It's kind of like our valedictorian, our salutatorian bird in a way. Exactly. I mean, it is. So this is just to let everybody know where they can go. They can go to Salty Draws and they can check this out. It's Silence Do Good, time travel agent, one of the most prolific founding fathers. And I love the concept of it. It's sort of like, well, let me ask you this too. Are you going to have Are you going to have, maybe in the future, is he going to ever be joined by some of the other founders? Are they ever going to find themselves in a similar position
In the next issue, he's actually going to be on a boat behind George Washington as they cross the Delaware. There's going to be a lot of crossover, and a young Ben Franklin's going to meet a lot of people in American history.
That's very cool. Sure. What do you hope that people take away from this series? What was your goal in doing this?
I honestly just wanted to bring some non-woke and pro-masculine, pro-America entertainment that isn't lecturey or preaching. It's just telling, because there's so many good stories in our history, and then there's a story happening now in our history, and I just want to bring that to people in a fun, entertaining way.
We're talking with Sean Salter. Salty Draws is the website. Silence Do Good, time travel agent. I love that you're bringing back the whimsical nature of telling stories, because that's what ultimately hooks people in. And then you get them with everything else. You get them with the rest of the content. And I worry about kids today. I feel like we had it because we're Gen X. I feel like we had it. We lived in the best time ever. We grew up in the best time because we had just enough technology. Like the internet was going, when I was in high school, like we had email and all that, but we didn't really have like social media and none of that stuff. And I'm so glad we didn't have any of that. And we had the best of all of the worlds, just enough of everything, right? Yeah. And now I feel like everything's been ruined. Everything is so sanitized. It's soulless. What is that going to do to the imagination of kids? Like, how does that, I know that affects development. I'm sure there's psychological arguments for how that affects development. But as an artist, how does that concern you? Because this also impacts the future of what you do and who comes after you.
Well, I've always looked at technology as a tool. I think the bigger enemy of a child's imagination is the modern day professional educator. That is the murderer of a child's imagination. And I think that's the issue that we have to worry about. Like, everything's a tool at the end of the day, and it's how we use it. And it really is those morals and those values that we put into children when they're young that actually allow them to have that imagination. But public education and even private education is murdering children's imaginations. And where kids learn and grow the most is at play. And that's really what I'd love to bring back for kids. It's just like, let's learn through play. Let's learn through fun. Not, you know, it's so top down and not working.
I agree with you so much. I totally agree with you. And we don't allow any time for that. And everything is just, and also people are afraid to freely be creative. I mean, you know, this is a creator. I mean, I don't want to tell everybody where you worked. I mean, that's, you know, but you, I mean, you worked at, it's making headlines. Let's just say you worked with an entity that's making a lot of headlines right now.
Yes, I did.
And all of that is, if you cannot be free to express what's going on in your head in an artistic way, how are you actually, I mean, are you really fully creating art? Are you really fully engaging? And that has to be incredibly difficult.
I mean, Andrew Klavan says it best. If you can't live your truest self and just be who you are, your soul dies. A little bit of you dies inside. And that part is the creative part. And that's what Hollywood is doing to so many creatives, is that they have to fit this little mold, and it's killing and murdering creativity. And so that's why films like the new Willy Wonka has no magic. They have all the special effects and it looks so cool. And then you watch it and you're just like, you feel dead inside because the people that are creating it are kind of dead inside.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's why. I mean, everything seems like fake, wannabe, like great value whimsy and fun, mm-hmm. and it's not. It's just so stale and awful. We need more stuff like this. So this is awesome. Salty Draws is the website. Now, people can pre-order because you're in the middle of it's all being created now, the 13 issue mm-hmm. series that you can people can go see the teaser video. You can go read, see some of the panels, read, learn more about the characters, see the story. But I highly encourage everyone to go check it out because it's such a good concept. And it's so whimsical. And it really it's very nostalgic for me to look at a lot of this stuff because I'm like, this is how it's supposed to be. Like there's God love you for being Gen X. Sean Salter, my good friend. Always so good to see you. And this is cool. Very, very cool.
Thank you so much, Dana. My friend. It's good to see you too.
Of course. Take care. We'll talk again soon.
Bye.
Salty Draws is the website. You can go and check it out. And we have a lot. I mean, it's a great series. And it's so not woke. I didn't want to tell everybody where he worked at, but he totally worked in Hollywood. Very prolific artist in Hollywood. And it was killing him to work out there just because they as he was saying and he kind of alluded to, I mean, you don't have the freedom to be expressive and creative and everything has to be DEI and CRT and all this stuff. I can't draw to save my life, but I honestly feel like, I mean, I think those people are really hurt first and the worst. I honestly do believe that.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Make sure that you go and sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse, all kinds of good stuff that comes out on that regularly. And in the meantime, today in stupidity.
All right, the National Defense Authorization Act. The bill gives service members biggest pay raise in decades, bans the Pentagon from doling out taxpayer-funded sex reassignment surgeries and the rest. But Hakeem Jeffries says
our
this
view
about it.
Of the National Defense Authorization Act is that it is woefully irresponsible that extreme MAGA Republicans have hijacked a bipartisan bill that is essential to our national security.
Oh my God. This guy.
Well, then why did they clutter it up with all this DEI stuff and trans surgeries and everything else? Like, why did you do that then? Folks, that does it for us tonight. Have a wonderful weekend. Sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. I'll be back with you on Monday.